Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network. The Women of Golf Show is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine with insightful reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, helping you improve your game from tee to green. Good morning. Welcome to the Women of Golf, the number one women's golf show around the world, with hosts Ted Odorico and Cindy Miller. Join them as they interview some of the best players from the Epson, LPGA and Legends Tour, and so many others helping to elevate women's golf. So without further ado, here are your hosts, Ted and Cindy.
All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Women of Golf Show. I'm Ted Odorico, and right alongside, of course, is LPGA professional and Legends Tour player Cindy Miller, and we are your hosts here on the Women of Golf. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are things up in Buffalo?
Well, the sun is out. It's still a bit chilly, but the sun is out, so there's hope.
Yeah. I know some of that chill has been coming down. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we started the Under Armour Junior Tour on Saturday, and it snowed a bit. The kids were a little cold, needless to say.
Well,
you have to do what you have to do.
Suck it up, buttercup, as they say, right? You got to get
that
out.
That is exactly
play.
What I did say.
I know. That's why I said it. All right. We got a great show for everyone this morning. We're joined once again by a very special guest, Karen Chung, who is an LPGA Epson Tour player. And then a little bit later, we are going to have a great discussion on the parallels of golf and life. And I'll tell you a little bit about that as we get closer to that. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Karen. She is from New Jersey and played collegiate golf at the University of Southern California, and says she pursued golf because she has played for so long and feels like she has some unfinished business. We'll talk to her about that and more. Hobbies include just visiting coffee shops with friends and doing a little online shopping. She said if she weren't a professional golfer, she would be a fashion designer or interior designer for homes. She's been on, we were just talking about this off air, she's been a guest twice previously on the Women of Golf Show back in March of 2019 and October of 2020. And here she is for her third time. Cindy, let's welcome our special guest this morning, Karen Chung.
Good morning.
Hello. How are you guys?
We're doing well. And you?
Good, good. Ready to get the season going again.
I bet. So tell us what you're doing.
Well, currently I am about to head over to the airport after this to drop my dog off in New Jersey to my parents. Really sad about that, but, you know, mom's got to make some money so I can feed my child.
I get it. And how
That's
long
fantastic.
Will you be gone from your baby?
I think until July, and then we have a northeast swing for the Epson Tour in July, so I'm going to stop by at home, grab my dog, and then she'll be traveling with us for the month, so I'm excited.
Well, that's good. She'll be happy to see mommy again.
Yes.
You're not coming to Rochester either, are you?
No, I don't think so. I think that event might be – oh, no. Actually, no, we go up there – during July.
You're coming to Rochester?
Or is that event over with? I'm not. Oh, we go to Albany.
You're going to Albany.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That was my bad.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's 5 or 6 hours away from me.
Yes.
I love you, but not that much. Too long a drive. Sorry.
It's too long of a drive.
Yeah. Anyway. So, I want to know about the fashion designing. Talk to me about that.
Oh, so fashion designing is something I've just been super interested as a kid too. I mean, I didn't really act upon it, but I love watching fashion shows. I love watching like what people wear like on the golf course, off the golf course, just like normal clothes. Then I went to SC and they were really big on fashion designing there too, and I wanted to do it, but it never fit into our practice schedule.
Do you know how to sew?
Huh?
Do you know how to sew?
Oh, yes, I do. Because my parents are also in, like, dry cleaning businesses. So I, like, kind of watched throughout the years to do, like, all the sewing, pressing, everything.
That's pretty cool. Because
yes.
I know how to sew. And I used to make clothes. And I even made shirts for Augusta National. And I shirts, and Joanne Carner used to wear them on tour, and I have an embroidery business, so it's really fun and cool. But you know what? It's really hard, and my daughter's like, let's make this clothing line, and I have a registered trademark and a logo for clothing, and it's like, but how are we going to do this and get famous? I have no idea. So if and when you quit playing and you want to do that, call me and let me know. And if I'm not dead, maybe we could do it.
Oh, my gosh. What are you talking about? Yes, I will definitely be reaching out.
Okay. Let me know. But first win the U.S. Open, and then we could be more famous.
Yes, I love that. You know,
because my daughter works at the Golf Channel, so you would have old fart lady who played the tour, Golf Channel girl, and U.S. Open winner. So there you go.
It
could
love
be a,
that.
Yeah, an awesome hit. Now,
yes.
Ted, you can ask her about her golf game.
All right.
We've got the business figured out.
Yeah, you got the business. That's right. Boy, I'm stumped now. I gotta push that out of my mind. I can imagine. Yet you are. No, that's fantastic. You know, I think I'm not even gonna touch that. So let me ask you. Let's get down to golf because that's why we brought you here.
Yes.
We're not talking fashion. We're talking golf.
No.
So
yes.
You've been playing for a number of years, obviously on tour, and as I mentioned, you've been on before and that. Give us what a typical day would look like for you, both tour. So when you're not playing in an event, how much are you practicing? And are you working on specific things at that time? And then when you're out on tour, give us what a typical day would look like when you're traveling and getting to the events.
So on a typical tournament week, I will probably fly in Sunday night just so I have, like, time to not rush around. I'll play my first practice round on Monday, and I usually take Tuesday off and just, like, go to the range, hit some putts. Wednesday and Thursday, either whichever day is the pro-am day, I'll play that round one more time, and then we usually just kind of send it for the weekend. But when I'm back home, I'll try to go out maybe four times a week and just play 18 holes. I hate staying on the range and just repetitively beating balls. Like, for me, I feel like that has no help. But besides that, I'm pretty much really chill. I love to stay away from the golf course as much as possible because I eat, breathe, and live it the entire year. And I feel like that's the key to not burning out and, like, keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's been kind of my little trick throughout the years.
I think that's smart. I really do. I think it's very smart on your part because, you know, Cindy and I have talked to many players like yourself on from tour on the show. And mm-hmm. you can sometimes sense from the conversation the ones that have kind of gotten a little burnt out. I mean, they still love the game. They still want to play, but they've just eat, slept, breathed golf so much
mm-hmm.
in such a short period of time that they just feel like they're going to melt like into a pool of water.
Right.
And so I think you have to have good balance.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned something that was really interesting, and I want to pick up on this. You talked about how you really don't spend a lot of time on the range. You're out there playing. Unfortunately, the amateur golfers do the opposite. You see a lot of the range rats out there, and they're just raking and hitting
right.
balls. Mm-hmm. If you were standing on the range warming up and you saw a group of range rats down there doing that and you thought to yourself, I'm going to go down and give them some advice on how to become a better player. Forget about hitting the ball mm-hmm. better. I'm going to teach you mm-hmm. how to become a better player. What would that conversation entail?
You know, I would tell them putting is the key to lowering your score. I mean, you could whack it around anywhere. It's like us on tour too. I've seen girls hit it everywhere. But if they make the putt, we're shooting the same thing, and there's no pictures on the scorecard. I'd be like, go out to the golf course, figure out how to get on the green first, and just go whack some more putts instead of whacking golf balls on the range.
I think that's good advice. And you've played, I'm sure, in pro-ams as well, and you see a lot of people who miss club a lot, don't really know what they're doing, but they don't want to look bad in front of the pros, so they're kind of just mm-hmm. schlepping through it. Again, talk about that. You've seen a lot of things. Give us an example of things that you've seen in a pro-am that you just sort of go, oi, you know, I can't believe that they're doing that. Give us an example. Obviously, you don't have to name names, but just give us an example of things that you've seen that you wish mm-hmm. that they wouldn't do.
So I had this one pro-am group, and they were all super excited to play, super sweet. But one of the gentlemen in our group was getting so frustrated, like right off the bat. And golf is not his day job, like us. So I went over to him eventually on hole 8, and I was like, dude, you know, you don't do this for your job. Just stay out here and enjoy the day. Usually you're in an office, not seeing any sunlight, like, just enjoy the day. Golf will always be there. If you want to improve on it, you can always improve on it if you put your mind to it. But you can't just sit, like, walk out here and expect greatness.
Right. Ain't that the truth? Yeah, and you know what, and Cindy, I'm sure you would agree, you've played many pro-ams yourself, and you've seen, I'm sure, similar. They don't get the fact that you're out there working on your game all the time. You're practicing, you're playing, and they're getting out maybe, you know, once a week at best, in some cases, not even that. And so I think, you know, Cindy, from your perspective, do you agree with what Karen's saying? And is there anything that maybe you'd like to add from what you've seen from your own experiences?
I don't think they understand how hard it is to make it look simple. You know, their expectations, you know. Again, everyone's trying to hit the ball. And when you're, it's funny because lately I've been working too much. I'm sitting in the airport now. I'm flying to Phoenix today. Somebody goes, what are you doing? And I said, I can't wait to go sit in a hotel room by myself. And just push the TV changer and go stupid for 2 days, right? Without Alan. Did anybody hear that? Hopefully not, right? Because he doesn't listen to the show, right? And it's just because you just want to say to people, stop trying to hit the ball. You know, swing the club. And if you can't swing the club, you can't hit the ball, but you're trying to hit the ball. And that's what these guys are doing, and girls, but mostly men. So they're trying to pound the ball, and they're playing with this little girl that's 5'2", that weighs 100 pounds, that's hitting at 260, and they can't believe it, and they're trying to pound it, and then they dig to China or hit it, you know, 50 yards right into the woods. And the harder they try, the worse they hit it, and then they look stupid, and then they want to quit. And you just want to say, please stop. Just swing the club. Relax your arm. Right, Karen?
Yeah, I mean, 1,000%.
Yeah, and so you just want to say to them, you have no idea how long it's taken me to make this look so easy, you know. So if anyone's listening, just know that this is really hard. This is mental torture. There's thousands of hours of beating balls and crying, you know, whatever, and wanting to quit. Like you just said, there's unfinished business here. I have to prove to myself the dream I had when I was, you know, 12 years old is in a nightmare that's going to haunt me for the rest of my life. I have to prove something to myself. So I'm taking a deep breath, I'm relaxing my arms, and I'm out here swinging the club and practicing putting so I can make more putts. And if you watch Scotty, Scotty is the perfect example of I'm going to act like I don't care, but I want to win more than anyone, and I hate shooting over par. I mean, I love watching him because I don't act anything like him. But every time I watch him and listen to him talk, he's slapping me across the face because, like, Cindy, stop trying. Right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
I'll
it's amazing. I just
now.
Want to. No, that's not a problem. Thank you for that. Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Scotty Scheffler. You know, what was interesting during and even after the Masters, and I know that he probably gets a certain amount of criticism for this as well, but really it's a strength, is he really shows no emotion. I mean, when he was out the golf course, on the rare occasions when he did hit a bad shot, you know, I mean, there was nothing. You didn't see him, you know, thumping the club down. You didn't see him grimacing, you know, under it. He just went on, you know, got up and addressed the next shot and did what he had to do. And, you know, even after winning the Masters for the second time, again, you know, which is, I give him par for the course on this, but, you know, he was thinking about his wife back home who was, you know, expecting, you know, their first child. That was his priority. I mean, he loves the game, obviously enjoys playing, but that was not his priority. And it kind of goes, really, Karen, what you're saying is, you know, you love playing, you want to make this your career, but at the same time, there's other important things in your life as well. And you don't want to miss out on those opportunities because you're so dug deep into, I've got to beat balls all the time, I've got to do this or else, to the point where you suddenly don't enjoy life anymore. So I want to ask you, when you're out on the golf course and things aren't going well, when you're not hitting the shots you hope to hit or you plan to hit, what do you say to yourself? What's the conversation that's going on in your mind? Because a lot of people want to know that from a professional's perspective.
So when I'm on the golf course playing a tournament and things aren't going too well, I mean, I am human, so I will get mad. But the madness only lasts for that one shot right after I hit. So let's say I hit my second shot, not too well, and I'm walking up to the green. I'll be mad all the way up to the green. And then I'll get up to the green and I'll be like, okay, if I keep this anger inside of me, this round is either going to go really well or really bad, and I don't know which one I'm going to get, so we might as well just cool off, take a breather, and then I think this is what I've learned throughout the years, just grinding out here, but usually when I get to the next hole after I've gotten really angry, I try to tell myself, hey, like, I try to remember all the people who are there supporting me, try to remember other things off the course that try to make me happy. And I'm like, we can't be taking this for granted right now. And if I'm just going to be here for the week being angry just because of a couple bad shots, I'm wasting my time and everybody else's time who supported me throughout the entire campaign.
I think that's some great advice. You know, everybody, I'm sure even Scotty internally, there's moments when he's disappointed and, you know, not happy with himself in that particular moment when a bad shot. But I think he has learned to address that issue in such a way that it doesn't overwhelm him. It doesn't overtake. And we've seen a lot of players over the years on the PGA and even the LPGA tour where they do have that sort of internal struggle and it spills out into their physical game as well. And that can be detrimental to, you know, being a good player. I'm going to ask one more question, then I'm going to bounce it back to Cindy. Did you have a mentor growing up? Was there somebody that you looked up to, not necessarily about golf, but just really kind of helped get you on the right path? And if so, who was that?
So I did. I actually started playing golf, and my parents sent me to IJGA, and my first coach ever there was the best mentor I've had to this day. And unfortunately, he did pass away a couple years ago, so I don't have him here with me, but he was always so positive. I mean, this man, anything can happen, and he'll just be happy. He's a light. He was a light, and I really love that energy from him, and I was like, hey, like, that's just something I aspire for, and I want to be a light for other people around me too. So So I just kind of try to walk down his path of being a light.
I think that's a great story, and I think it's important for everybody. I mean, we all had somebody, for the most part. I mean, there may be a few exceptions, but for the most part, we all had somebody that we kind of looked up to, and I don't want to say idolized, because I think sometimes that can be sort of misconstrued, but I think that we looked up to and admired and thought, okay, you know what, I'd kind of like to be like that too, and not necessarily what they're doing, but just their personality. So I think that's a great one to have, and as you said, unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but his memories mm-hmm. live on, and obviously the things that you remember from all of those conversations and all of that support have stuck with you even, you know, a few years later. So, and will, I'm sure, carry through the rest of your life. So great to have that. Cindy, go ahead.
What's the best part of your game?
Oh, my gosh. The best part of my game? Driving. I could stand on a tee box all day. And then after that, it's a hit or miss.
Really?
Yes.
Why do you think?
You know, I think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about having so many thoughts in your head and, like, just, like, caring a little too much. I feel like once I get closer to the green, last year what held me back was a bit of putting. I went through 5 putters last year, and it was not the best putting year, but, yeah, ever since then, I think I kind of got a little antsy heading into the green. So off the tee, I knew that was my strongest point, and that's never left. So kind of easy, but first my second shot, first putt, yeah, it was a hit or miss. Roll the dice.
How left-brained are you? Like, do you think about score or you just let it rip?
I used to be really result-based, but I've kind of changed since a couple years ago, and I just kind of try to send it now. Just no thoughts. Keep it simple.
Is it better that way?
Yes, it's been a lot better, and I think I finally found something on the putting green. It's a really unconventional way, but it's been working so far in this season, so we're just going to run with it until we have to find something new.
What's the unconventional way, if you can tell us?
So I actually went back to one of my old putters that got me onto the tour 2017, and I tried normal claw, and that was kind of feeling a little funky to me, so I tried, hey, you know what? Let's try reverse claw. So I am currently putting reverse claw on the greens.
Who cares?
I know.
Do you know if you're have you ever heard of linear, nonlinear?
Don't know if I'm too familiar with that.
Do you see straight lines or curved lines?
Oh, I see curved lines all day.
Do you use a line on your ball?
No.
Good. Don't. Ever.
It confuses me.
Okay. So if you don't see straight lines,
mm-hmm.
don't ever. So this is a big deal. And if you have issues, send me an email, cindy@cindymillergolf.com. This is going to change your life. So my husband played on the PGA Tour for 15 years. He's the second tier ball striker Dave Powell's ever tested. And if he could have putted, we would never have to work again. So he's nonlinear. I'm nonlinear. So listen to me.
Uh-huh.
When you look at a putt, you're going to lay a clock on the hole, okay? So midnight is straight away from you. 6 o'clock is right in front of you. If the ball's going in, it's right to left. Let's pretend it's going in right to left, and it's going to break, and it's falling in the hole at 4 o'clock. You with me?
Yes.
You with me? You're never looking at 2 cups outside the hole. You're going to look at 4 o'clock.
Oh, yes.
Me?
I can imagine that. Yeah, you see the curvature that it's going in at the number.
So you're going to lie. So you're never looking outside the hole. You're never looking outside the hole. You're going to look at 4 o'clock. So you're looking at 4 o'clock.
Yes.
and you're going to make every putt you look at, and you're going to go, what the heck just happened to me?
You're going to make everything you see. Oh, my God, I can imagine that. Wow, that's
so go try that.
Life-changing.
It's going to be. It's going to be. It would have changed his whole career. One shot around, and we would be multimillionaires.
I'm going to try that at Tucson. Thank you, Cindy.
Yeah, you have no idea. And again,
wow.
PGA Tour Series Radio is doing a one-hour feature on him a week from today at 8 o'clock at night. And
that's amazing.
It's a good story, bad story, good story. I mean, you have no idea. He tried to commit suicide. He was an alcoholic. I filed for divorce. We didn't get divorced. It's Lanny Watkins and him were number one amateurs in the country. It's going to be a good, bad story, good story. But it was a big deal. So it would have changed his whole – he might not have even married me, which would have been a shame. But anyway, so I'm telling you, this would have changed his whole career. So if you have issues, Cindy at CindyMillerGolf.com. I'll send you a video if you want. But
yes.
Mike Shannon is a guy, and he's at Sea Island, Georgia, and it changed everything. And he found out about it, 25 years after he quit playing the tour. Non-linear.
Wow, always that's amazing. I'm definitely going to try that. It's in play.
Okay.
It's in the golf bag.
Good. Yeah, so if it's straight, it's going in at 6 o'clock. If
yes.
it's going left to right, it's going in at 6:37, 7:38, 8:39. Get it?
Yes.
Never play it. Never look at, so if a caddy's going, you got to play this a cup outside. No, you're never doing that because you're always going to miss the putt by how much because nonlinear people have an inner knowing. So you're
right.
Never looking outside the hole. You're always looking at the target. But you're looking at, okay. So you'll know you are when you say, you know what, I had a putt one time that I had no idea where the hell it was going, and I just kind of looked at the hole, and it went in, and you're like, I've had that happen, and I didn't know how to aim, and it's like, I had no idea how, and it just went in the hole. Well, that's why, because you're nonlinear. And you can be tested with a laser, but I'm saving you a trip to Mike Shannon and a lot of money, so.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll shut up now, Ted.
However, on that note, Karen, when you win the U.S. Open, you have to give Cindy a cut for this in-depth knowledge. So I just want you to forewarn her of that. She'll be expecting
we're gonna
a check in
the mail. We're going to make a fortune with our clothing company.
Oh, my gosh, 1,000%. We're going to have a clothing line, too.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
Fantastic.
We're going to be badass
bitches,
baby.
I love it.
Well, you picked a good partner, Karen. I'll tell you, Cindy's the best. So you're getting ready this week coming up. You're going to be heading to, I believe you'd said off air, Arizona for the next Epson Tour event. Do you do anything special to prepare for an event? Is there anything that goes through your mind, or you just get up there, go through a little bit of practice, and then you just, let the golf gods decide what's going to happen? What do you do in preparation for an event?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what I do. I try to keep my routine same just so my whole entire life is kind of the same and it's nothing new when I get to the tournament site. But, yeah, I mean, I guess if anything changes the week before I fly out, I will start playing a little bit more. Like, I'll play more rounds with my friends. We'll have, like, little tiny little bets here and there, and I'll try to put myself more in tournament mode and get that competitiveness out of me. But, that's about it. And then I get there, and then same routine, keep it simple, and then see what happens.
I think that's a good attitude to have. Do most of your friends play golf or some not play?
I would say I have a pretty good mix of friends, but I definitely do have my closer friends out on tour. But when I'm back home, I try to remove myself from that a little bit just so I live as a normal human being for a couple days.
I think that's good. You have to have, as I said earlier, you've got to have some balance. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
I think it's good, and I think you've got a good future, and I think it's going to get better now with the advice that Cindy gave you. So definitely try that out. She's got some good words of wisdom for you. But Karen, thank you very much for coming on and joining us this morning. We appreciate it again. As I said to you off air, third time is a charm, and we really enjoyed having you come on. And safe travels and good luck in Arizona.
Thank you. Thank you so much
good
for
luck,
having
honey.
Me again. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
All
thank
right.
you. Hopefully I'll be back here again with a tournament win.
Yes,
that's
ma'am.
We would love it. You're welcome. You're welcome back even if you don't have one. But, yeah, that would even be sweeter. So good luck, Karen. Have a good one. Safe travels.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Karen Chung, member of the LPGA's Epson Tour, and she's going to go out and battle it next week in Arizona. So we wish her well there. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then you and I are going to come back, and we're going to talk about the parallels of golf and life, and I'll explain a little bit more when we come back. But first, let's hear from a new sponsor, Victory Gear.
In the world of golf, every swing, every step, and every stance counts. But what if you could enhance your game and reduce pain while keeping your legs fresher? The answer? One simple change to your gear. Introducing Victory's carbon fiber insoles, the revolutionary performance insoles designed specifically to help athletes reach their full potential. Using patented carbon fiber technology, VKs do more than support your feet. They lower the impact on your joints while improving your stability, letting you hit the links more often with less pain. Visit victory.com, that's VKTRY.com, and use code GT20 for 20% off today. This offer is exclusive for listeners of this podcast. Again, that's victory.com, and use code GT20 for 20% off. With Victory's 90-day money-back guarantee, your only risk is that your playing partner has these insoles, and you don't.
All right, welcome back. You're live with Cindy Miller, and I'm Ted Roderico, and we're, as I said, the hosts of the Women of Golf show. All right, we're going to have a discussion. This is an interesting, I think, discussion we've not really had before, and this is stemming from a series of books that I have put together. This one is called The Parallels of Golf and Life, and they're not officially available yet. They will be shortly. And I thought this would make for an interesting discussion this morning. So I've taken a little excerpt out of it, and we're going to have that conversation. But let me just tell you, first off, what the purpose of this book was: to explore the parallels between golf and life in a comprehensive and meaningful way. By examining the skills, challenges, and philosophies inherent in both, we aim to uncover insights that can enrich our understanding of each. The book seeks to illuminate the ways in which golf can serve as a microcosm for life, offering lessons that are applicable both on and off the course. So the first one that I want to touch on a little bit, Cindy, and that is golf as a metaphor for life. And I believe this to be true. You may feel the same way, but the game's inherent challenges from its unpredictability of things like the wind, obviously undulation and terrain that we are faced with many times, I think serve as fitting metaphors for the obstacles one also encounters in the journey of life. Do you agree with that? Have you found that to be true in your life as well, that you see many parallels in how you deal with yourself on the golf course, how it sort of spills over into life and vice versa? What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. It's been long, you know, known that the game totally parallels life. I mean, you have to make decisions. You're the only one swinging the club. And how you handle yourself on the golf course is basically paralleled with how you will handle yourself in life or in business. And people do, you know, people play golf with business people just to figure out whether or not they want to do business with people, because how they handle themselves on the golf course will inherently, you know, be duplicated with how they will handle themselves in a business situation. Don't you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly. And I think just as in life requires a thoughtful approach to navigate its many ups and downs, golf asks players to consider each shot carefully, weighing the risks and rewards before taking action. And, you know, so I've always said, you know, if you can navigate the challenges in life, and obviously there's some things that have to be factored in. Obviously, you have to be able to hit the golf ball, but it helps you inherently handle yourself out in the golf course when you're faced with, you know, sand traps, water hazards, whatever the case may be, you know, a difficult terrain. If you can do that and handle the life's challenges with, you know, a certain semblance of success, then you're going to do the same on the golf course. And the same thing on the golf course, how you handle it. And you raised a great point, you know, and as did Karen, you know, if you're focusing so hard to be perfect, as opposed to just dealing with what you're faced with, you're not going to be successful. And that doesn't mean you're going to be at the tour level. I don't mean it that way. But if you're constantly worried about how your swing looks, or, you know, is it just perfect? Am I hitting it just perfect? You know, as you both have mentioned, you know, you can slap it all over the place, but when you get on the putting surface, if you're sinking those putts, you know, that can cover a multitude of sins when it comes to your golf game. Spend too much time dwelling on trying to make it look perfect and not really focusing on playing and having fun. And I think it's the same thing in life. If you're trying to be too perfect in life, then that's going to cause problems there as well. And I think that's why they both really work hand in hand. The next point I want to get into.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say.
Go ahead. Keep going.
Talk about some of the life lessons from golf that you've been able to impart based on, again, the skills that you've learned playing the game that have sort of transcended into life. What have you done that out in the golf course that you can specifically identify and saying, you know, this has helped me? And you can do it the other way as well if you prefer, but life lessons from golf. I think there's a lot of things that we, you know, as a technical skills required to play the game, as an example, it teaches you a lot of things. What are some of the things that golf has taught you that has helped you in your everyday life?
I think it's strategic planning. I think it's thinking about where you want to go and how you want to play the hole. Again, I think going back to your behavior style, right? And I'm really big into that. You have to know yourself. As Karen just said, you know, she used to try too hard to shoot a score, and now she's more freewheeling it and not thinking so much. I think again, I'm a high D personality. It's a competitive control freak, and I might make a shot. It's really more of a stupid mistake. I might fire at a pin where there's four different behavior styles. You know, there's the D, the I, the S, and the C. The I doesn't pay attention to details. The S is more thought-provoked. So Scottie Scheffler's a high S, and he's going to be steady and unemotional, and a C is really detail-oriented. And so, again, you've got to play the odds, and I think I've learned because a D marries an S and an I marries a C, and because I've hung out with my husband, who's a high S, for so long, I've learned to play smarter golf. You know, he's more like Scottie Scheffler. So, again, I've learned, you know, is that my smartest play from this situation? So instead of making a rash decision in life, I sit back and wait, you know, is this my smartest move? Where I might have before said, oh, let's go do this. And now I'm like, well, wait a minute, let's think about that first. So that's what golf has taught me the most.
Yeah, and I think, for me, I agree 100% with what you said. I think for me as well, it teaches you honesty. You know, you have to keep your own score. You have to learn to, you know, call penalties on yourself. And it instills a sense of humility. No matter what skill level you are or become, you're always going to be presented with new challenges, and there's going to be some humbling moments, if you will. And I think that that's something in life as well, whether you're on or off the golf course. I mean, there's going to be things that you're going to overcome, and you're going to be very excited, and you're going to be, passionate about it. And then there's going to be challenges where you're not going to be as successful. And you have to humble yourself and not give up is the other thing too, is you have to never give up no matter what you're doing in life, whether you're playing golf professionally or whether you're doing something else. You're going to have sort of a risk reward type scenario, and there's going to be failures, and you have to learn from those failures. So those are really, I think, life lessons from the game itself that have helped me over time, is that when you play, you're going to have some good holes, some good shots, some bad shots, and so forth. But it's what you do with that information afterwards. I like what Karen talked about where, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I got to say something. I had a junior golfer, and she wasn't playing in the Under Armour Junior Tour. She played in a Western Yard PGA event the other day. And the same day we played, so it was, 45, and it snowed a little bit. And so I said, how many fairways did you hit? She only missed three fairways. How many greens did you hit? Three. Okay, why did you miss the greens? Well, I didn't know there was bunkers. I go, that's not an excuse. Why did you hit it in the bunker? Well, I hit it short. Well, why? She didn't say I didn't take the right club. So it wasn't like I didn't hear I. I want to hear
right.
I didn't take the right club. I didn't hear that, right? So she came in for a lesson, and at the end of the lesson, my 7-iron and my 6-iron are going the same distance. I said, well, those stupid clubs, why are they doing that? Right? Those stupid clubs. And so I didn't hear I said, well, what are you doing with them? Well, I don't know. So I didn't hear I, right? So I believe the game, if you are open, and I have the it box, right? Get off the nail.
Mm-hmm.
There's three things in the it box if you choose to own it. I have to get off the nail. Stop whining. Get off the nail. Then I have to look in the mirror. What am I doing? Guess who's holding the club? You. I am holding the club. What am I doing with the club? So I think, the game of golf, what I am in charge of my life. So I am holding the club. What am I doing with the club? Why is the ball going the same distance? Well, it's really not. It's, 8 to 10 yards difference between clubs is not a lot. Now, if you're standing in a dome, it may appear that they are going the same. If it's 45 degrees, the hole is uphill, you can't tell that it's, what I mean? So again, we can sit here and whine. So the funny thing is I said to her, I said, look, with how far you hit it as far as a tour player, and you are 13 years old. The fact that you only hit, three greens in regulation is disgusting, especially because the yardage was 5,200 yards. Now, when you hit an 8-iron 140 and you hit three greens, that's terrible. And I said to her mother, if I'm getting too hard on her, you just say, Cindy, take a chill pill. She goes, no, she needs to hear this. I said, I know she needs to hear this, but I'm just saying, if I'm getting too hard, you tell me to back off. I said, you should never shoot over 82. So yesterday, last night, I get a text message from the kids. I hold out an eagle yesterday from 82 yards, and I shot 82. I said, well, good for you. I'm proud of you. She said, thank you. But again, it's like you've got to become responsible. And if you're going to sit there and whine to me about it's always the club's fault, I don't want to hear it.
Right.
So what's the lesson? You say you want to be a good player, stop whining. Take responsibility. And if you're not going to do that, you're never going to be a good player.
Exactly. That's a great example. That's a perfect example of it exactly is, that kind of goes to what we were talking about earlier with Karen. In pro-ams, you see a lot of excuses coming out, and what they don't really talk about is, you know what, I don't practice very much. I don't play very much. They don't come out with that. There's always something else. It's the club's fault or what have you. And, you know, they're not realistic in their expectations given the circumstances. All right, the next one I want to move on to real quick is life skills and coping mechanisms. So to manage life's challenges, individuals develop a range of life skills and coping mechanisms. And coping mechanisms are strategies that people use to deal with stress and difficult emotions. Some of the life skills and coping as well is include problem solving, communication, emotional regulation, and stress management. And by developing these skills, it enables individuals to handle adversity with resilience and to pursue their objectives with determination. So, again, you know, learning to problem solve, learning to identify what the problems are, and then coming up with, you know, to make an informed decision, and then coming up with something that will help prevent that, obviously, from happening again. It is going to happen again, but, you know, stress is an interesting beast, if you will, because, and learning to cope with that. So you've obviously, I'm sure, developed some or all or maybe others as well, and skills that you've developed and you use them in everyday life, but particularly out in the golf course to help cope with that. Maybe just give us an example, and you're welcome to use a student again if you want in this explanation, but talk about that as really the life skills and how you've been able to then cope with those in various situations.
Well, again, you know, you have to manage expectations. So if I'm playing in a tournament and I only play in one or two a year and I hit it yucky, it's like, okay, why'd the ball go there? What'd you do to cause that to happen? And I almost always know what I did to make that happen. And then I go, okay, here we go again, you know, because I'm a competitive lunatic. And then I have to say, you know, who do you think you are? You don't practice enough. You teach too much. You're not going to cancel lessons to practice because you're economically motivated. So if you cancel a lesson, you're not going to make money. So why are you playing like the merry-go-round? So you can't get ticked off because you're not going to cancel lessons to practice. So stop getting ticked off. And focus on what you're doing with the club. Open the face, stay back, and release. Okay. Go to the next one, right? So like she said,
yep.
I can't get ticked. I got to get over it till I get to what before I get to the next shot, or I'm going to miss the next shot. So that's the thing about golf, that if you stay ticked off, you're going to continue to hit yucky shots. That's the good thing about golf. And notice her attitude, Karen's attitude, that she's very aware of the team that's sacrificing to keep her out there for now 7 years on the Epson Tour. Okay, 7 years on the Epson Tour and not being exempt on the real tour, this is costing a lot of money. And again, and I'm not judging, but I'm saying, you know, it's time to play on the real tour and make some money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I haven't looked at, but again, it's, you know, how long are we going to do this? It's time to win. It's time to make some money. And so she can't have an attitude attack because there's a lot of people sacrificing. So good for her for being very reflective on, I need to be grateful and stop being a brat. So she's very mature. And again, that's what you have to learn. And you have to say, Cindy, stop being a snot. Grow up, you know. So I, again, if you're mature enough to look in the mirror, which sometimes it's hard. I mean, I tell people you got 5 seconds to get picked off, and then, you know, you can react, then you have to respond. Why did the ball go there? And then you can recover. But if you react for, you know, 20 minutes, get over yourself because it's only going to hurt you.
Well, and this goes to what I've said so many times on the show over the years is I equate this to folks at the airport dragging their baggage. And, you know, there's players who, you know, will check their baggage, and then there are those that drag it around the airport. And it's the same thing in golf. If you're bringing in those bags, every bad shot, every, you know, poor decision, every unfortunate circumstance with you, and you're carrying that throughout your round, then you're not going to, first, you're not going to play better because you're always going to be dwelling and thinking those negative thoughts. And as a result, you're not going to have fun. You're not going to enjoy yourself. And, I mean, there are so many players over the years that have allowed that to sort of mentally creep into their lives and into their golf game. And, you know, she made the conscious decision, as she said, I'm not going to do that anymore. You know, I love this game. I like playing and I'm enjoying, you know, the challenges and I'm enjoying the journey. But I'm not going to get so absorbed and overwhelmed that I get to a point. And that's why she doesn't spend hours and hours on the range, because to her, it has not been beneficial for her. And it's counterproductive. She prefers to get out and play and work on the various aspects of actually out in the golf course, as opposed to just being, you know, as we term it, a range rat. And that's smart on her part. Correct. She recognizes where her strengths are. She's identified what my strengths are, and that's what I need to focus on, and that's what I need to continue to move forward. And as she said, when she comes back, you know, from a tournament and she's got some time off, you know, golf is shoved to the side. She's doing other things. She has other passions, other, you know, interests. And I think that's important. And I think, unfortunately, I don't know if you remember, the name escapes me, but there was a young lady that we had on from Epson, from China. I think it was about 3 years ago now. And she came off a 6-month hiatus, I'll call it that. She had actually injured her ankle, I believe, or somewhere back of her foot. And club because of that injury until I think it was like a week or two before the first Epson event, which she won. Then she went on to win, I believe, the third event and ended up having a great year. And I'm trying to think of her name off the top of my head. But what was interesting about that is she didn't think about, she didn't play golf. She took 6 months off because she needed to nurse that injury. And she was confident enough in her game that she could pick those clubs up, you know, just before coming out. And ended up being successful as a result of it. So, you know, sometimes you have to take a break for that. And this, you know, I want to get into one more thing, or if we got time, maybe two. You know, applying some of these life lessons on the golf course, you know, lessons that we, you know, have learned in life, as we talked about earlier the other way. You know, for example, discipline, you know, in one exercise in their career or education can be channeled into the rigorous practice required to improve one's golf game. So, I mean, it may not necessarily be practice on the range. It might be playing more, getting out on the golf course and challenging yourself with different situations that you're going to be faced with. And then similarly, strategic thinking used in business can be employed in navigating a golf course. So this is where, you know, golf and life really draw a perspective and comparison here, in the sense that there are so many things that we do in each that are applicable. And you're welcome to comment on that. I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but I want to follow up with that and sort of in line what we were just talking about, and that is positive thinking in golf. But if you want to talk about, you know, applying the life lessons on the golf course, if you've got something that you want to mention, by all means, go ahead.
No, I totally agree with you. You got to be disciplined. You know, self-explanatory. Totally agree.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah. And there's just so many things, you know, mindset and attitude, and this is what I'm really getting at, and this is in the second chapter of The Parallels of Golf and Life that I've put together, and it's really very interesting. What's interesting about this, and I don't want to get on, you know, at a later point, I'll get into more detail about the book another time, but the purpose of this was really to give a thought-provoking way for people to really draw the parallels themselves. Most people kind of inherently understand this, but there's a lot of information that I put forth in this book, and I think it's really going to be a very valuable asset to a lot of people at all levels. There's a lot of things that challenge at a more entry level, and then there's things that are going to be very challenging for those that are more advanced and skilled. But positive thinking is a positive mindset is a very powerful tool on the golf course. It obviously involves an optimistic approach to the game, focusing on one's strengths and the potential for success rather than dwelling on the past mistakes, as I mentioned, dragging that baggage through the airport or the possibility of failure. Excuse me. It helps maintain confidence, composure, which are essential, I think, for peak performance. So talk about that as well. I mean, you've played on tour, you've played, you know, on the regular LPGA, and you played on the Legends Tour as well. How important was positive thinking for you? Because I know there were times you've mentioned here on the show where you got out there and, you know, things were the wheels on the bus fell off. It had to be difficult and challenging at times for you when you're in that situation. What did you do to keep yourself in a positive mindset?
I think like Karen said, short game is so important, and I believe that if you have a good short game, it can save you, because if you don't hit it good, getting it up and down can save you when you're hitting it yucky. And there was a caddy on tour named Mule, and he used to say, my maiden name was Kessler, and he used to say, yep, that's Cindy Kessler, man. She's got the best stroke out here. She'd be the best putter out here. And so I think that gave me hope. And I can remember how I felt, and it wasn't left brain. It was a feeling that I had when I stood over the putt, and I started to get that back, like at boot camp the last couple times. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, quit thinking. Just what did you feel when you putted like God? And so that positive feeling was like, you know, that was my gift. And if you could be good at anything, you want to be a good putter, because that can mm-hmm. save you. You know, it's like Scotty making par on Saturday or Sunday afternoon late, you know, on the last, almost the last hole he played, right?
Mm-hmm.
When he hit it in the water, 14 or 15, whatever it was. Anyway, again, if you got to be good at something, you want it to be putting. So that was my, you know, oh, I can do this. So it's knowing that there's something that can save you, and you want one thing that you can do that you're really, like she said, I'm good at driving. I don't think about that. Mm-hmm. So what's your caution, right? So she gets,
yep,
what's your clenched butt cheek? Where do you get clenched butt cheeks? And that's your Cynthia. So my evil twin, you know, is Cynthia. Where does Cynthia start to beat you up? And everybody's got a Cynthia, right?
Mm-hmm.
So know who your Cynthia is and what she says and where she's warning you. And then your Cindy has to overtake your Cynthia and just say, no, Cindy's got this. Cynthia's not going to win. And if Cindy knows what she's doing, Cynthia will never win. And so that sounds funny, but when Cindy's so positive, Cynthia can't win. And that's my putting. So you have to be positive with something. I mean, I know I went on and on there, but that's the feeling.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you're spot on. I think so many people fail to really understand their games. And I think when you take a step back, and this is why it's good, I think it's, you know, and it's not just a matter of selling lessons and things like that. Obviously, we're in the business of making money that way. But, you know, I think it's important to have a trained eye looking at what you're doing out on the golf course, because too often people get so determined, and we've seen it. You know, they're out in the range, they're just raking and hitting balls. There's no, you know, there's no method to their, you know, to their approach, and you can almost sense it, the closer you walk to them, you can feel the frustration. And then you get others that, you know, they're hitting a pretty good ball and whatever, and they're just kind of going through the motions, no, you know, not getting upset. They're looking around, listening to the birds and so on and so forth, and they're actually enjoying themselves. And that's because they don't take it so serious. That doesn't mean they're not serious golfers. It just means that they're not so serious about it that they're allowing it to overwhelm them, and they're focusing and they're practicing with purpose. And they're enjoying themselves. And if you're not enjoying themselves, it can be the most miserable experience of your life. But, all right, we got to go. That's a book that's going to be available shortly. I'll give you details at some point here in the next week to come, called The Parallels of Golf and Life. It's a very interesting read. There's 20 chapters in it. And I think there'll be a little something. I think there'll be a lot of something for everybody. So I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And I will let everybody know once it hits the store, and you can get your hot little hands on a copy of it. But on that note, we want a special thanks to Karen Chung for joining us early this morning. And as always, we're glad that you could join us here on the Women of Golf, and we will see you next week right here on the Women of Golf Show. Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Cindy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed listening to this week's Women of Golf Show. Ted and Cindy wish to thank this week's special guests. Remember to join them every Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on the iGolf Sports Network or on any of these social media platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, CastBox, TalkStream Live, and of course Spotify. To get updates on the show, you can follow the Women of Golf Facebook page at www.facebook.com/womenofgolf. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.